BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
35 years after the Treaty of Unity signalled the reunification of East and West Germany, the rumblings of discontent here in the East have grown ever louder. 40% of the people in this region of Brandenburg voted for the right-wing AfD, or Alternative for Germany party, in the last election. I want to find out why this is happening and what the relationship is now between East and West. So I've come back to Guben, a town and its countryside I know well.
We've come to the Doilowitz Lake, which is a really popular destination for both locals and tourists that come to the region to just come and relax, but clean enough to swim in and to have a little beach by the side and a little camping site. And since it's a public holiday today, Men's Day to be specific, or Himmelfahrt, Ascension Day, is also used by lots of people who are out on a bike ride or meeting friends. It's the same scenes wherever you go. So when we were sort of teenagers and young people in East Germany, that was what we would do. I was born not far from here, just a few miles down the road in Guben in 1985, so this was still before the Berlin Wall came down, and my father was stationed in this area as an Air Force officer in East Germany. And so the sight of pine trees, lakes, people just going for a swim, having a beer, it does all seem very familiar.
Nein, alles gut. Es driftet ab in die Politik.
Well, despite the holiday atmosphere and not wanting to talk about politics, for this group of men, it doesn't take long before issues of East and West come up. They say they don't have freedom of speech, that wages are still 20% lower in the East, and that even this public holiday is a West German import. Apparently, 20% of West Germans have never visited the East. Last Christmas, a book came out listing the 59 best travel locations in Germany, and 58 of them were in the West. I learned that from Dirk Oschmann, a professor of literature at Leipzig University, who has written a best-selling book titled The East, an Invention of the West, which bemoans how, despite unification, East Germans are still underrepresented and underappreciated in Germany today.
They are underrepresented in an enormous way. If you look at the average numbers, it's about 2% of representation, where it should be about 20% of representation, and it doesn't seem to improve. And people from East Germany don't get the impression that they are a force in this country. They are not allowed to have a kind of power in their property ownership. It's only about 10%, and 90% is owned by the West Germans.
What does that do to East Germans?
Well, it shows you that you don't have a voice in this country, that you don't have role models for yourself. You can't stay in East Germany and hope to have a career. So you have either to go to West Germany or to a foreign country. Then you can come to money, to power, or to influence. And that's very important because we are treated like second-class persons.
I think part of the issue that people have in the East is that their background, their story, hasn't been told in full complexity. But actually, there was a lot more to life in the GDR and in East Germany. And the cultural remnants of that, I think, still echo today.
My name is Fred Maro.
So for a bit of the history that has shaped attitudes in the East, we've come to see Fred Maro, the mayor of Guben. In the beautifully restored old hat factory that now houses the town hall, library and museum. Fred is the son of a bus driver and, at 64, has spent half of his life in the GDR and half in the reunified Germany.
What sets us apart is our location on the border. At the end of the Second World War, the town of Guben was divided, and half of the town beyond the river Neisser, where people used to live, was annexed to Poland. And where people worked, this side, was annexed to Germany. And so we had to create a town out of nothing, with a new town hall and town centre. But we grew incredibly in the 60s and 70s, when the chemical fibre factory was built here. As someone put it, we inflated like a balloon.
One person who remembers those years of the socialist GDR is Sabine Walli, who is a librarian in this building in Guben.
Well, there was lots of these block of flats where I grew up. We had a lot of schools, lots and lots of children. I remember always like the streets full of children. I mean, I felt, or we all felt, very well looked after. For me, it was a very happy time to grow up. So I think they taught us values, that you care for each other. We were brought up in like a collective. And this is something I'm seriously missing. When you look at the care system, on education, everything, it's down to profits, you know, and this we didn't have in East Germany.
Those memories of community are somewhat offset by the fact that by the 1980s, the elderly leadership of the GDR was seen to be unpopular, remote, and out of touch. And the Stasi, their secret police, a reviled intrusion into people's lives and liberty. And just downstairs from Sabine's library is a temporary exhibit about exactly that. We're now looking at an exhibition entitled Stasi, was war das? Or the Stasi, what was that? They can have a look at some of the Stasi methods. So we're looking at people sitting at their desks with big headphones on and listening intently to the conversations of others. Citizens spied on other citizens. Letters being sifted through, people's parcels, very, very personal. And the Stasi saw fit to open these parcels and check whether you were trying to flee or find a way to get out of East Germany. The way that the Stasi tried to monitor people's private conversations and really get deep into people's lives left a long shadow, in the sense that people still feel rather sensitive towards government interference, the idea that politics interferes with their day-to-day lives. So be that telling them which heating system to use in their homes, or which words to use, or how to speak about men and women. And that also, again, in East Germany raises particular memories. And also the distrust between politicians and the people, mutual distrust on both sides, was a particular feature of the GDR. But in the end, not even the Stasi could suppress the mounting discontent in East Germany, and we know what followed.
I'm standing on top of the Berlin Wall, which for years has been the most potent symbol of the division of Europe.
I wanna be an astronaut.
This is the middle of the checkpoint. The police are making no attempt to stop people. The gates have been thrown open and thousands of people are pouring over to take a look at a West. In some cases, their first look, and the elation is enormous. What do you think of tonight?
It's wonderful. That's what we waited for.
Berliners from both East and West linked hands and danced around their liberated territory. And behind them, people scrambled playfully up and down on the Berlin Wall itself, something they used to be shot for.
Have fun. You want out?
Here. In the East, the main goal was throwing off the police state, the oppression that people felt in their everyday lives. People themselves, they were looking for opportunity, which they didn't have in East Germany. They were looking for freedom, to cite David Hasselhoff.
Chris Reiter is senior editor at Bloomberg in Berlin and the co-author of Broken Republic, an account of Germany's current fragility and the rise of right-wing populism, some of which can be traced back to the dashed hopes that followed the fall of the wall.
What happened was a rapid series of events that kind of destroyed the institutions of East Germany. So when the Deutschmark was imposed onto East Germany, and all of a sudden then East Germany's industry was no longer viable, and there were industrial centers across East Germany that just failed. And so, you know, mass unemployment, people losing their livelihoods, people losing their support, communities like falling apart as the young people left to the West to find opportunity. So in the course of the years that followed, there was serious devastation in the East, and that was felt by every single person in every single community across that part of Germany.
6,000 industrial jobs were lost in Guben. Librarian Sabine Walli also lost her job.
The first thing which happened was shutting down libraries. Then all the industry here got closed down. I think it was like 1.5 million people went onto the street. And then between 1990 and 94, the double amount, it was 3 million people went onto the streets to protest against the loss of their working places and the injustice.
A lot of the things that East Germans may have valued in terms of their culture and the level of community, that was really sort of wiped away.
Many East Germans talk about the aftermath of the so-called peaceful revolution as a type of conquest, an annexation, There was a transfer of state property into private hands, often West German or international private hands, so that East Germans, who rented flats and houses, now had landlords in the West.
East Germany didn't really have a whole lot of choice in the matter of how reunification happened. And that's why we use that term annexation.
A lot of friends left as well, like me. The school where I went to doesn't exist anymore. And it's obviously it became much smaller. So we were like, I think 38,000 people before the wall came down. So now it's like 16,000.
This whole area that we're driving through now was part of a sort of workers' compound where housing was built for the workers in this typical prefab, drab, concrete style. But actually at the time people thought that this was very good accommodation. It was new, it was modern, it had proper heating. And now the town has only got half the population left that it had then. A lot of this housing is empty. The supermarkets can't sustain themselves here, so some of them have shut down and you've got empty buildings. And so the decision was made by the town to tear some of the housing blocks down. And so it's not completely empty. They tore down every other one and tried to put a bit of grass and green space in between. So it's nice and airy now, but at the same time, it does feel a little bit deserted. There's barely anybody out on the streets.
It was clear that the East was an area where you had to leave if you wanted to have any future at all.
Sabine Rennefanz is a journalist and author who grew up in Eisenhüttenstadt in East Germany, a model socialist town built around a steelworks. She has written vividly about what she terms the rage of the Wende, the post-unification generation who lived through that rapid transformation.
50% of the people were unemployed. They lost their dignity. They were humiliated. They had to move west to get new jobs. No big companies were coming. They were often fighting for their property. It was like the big tragedy that people thought they had overcome this depressive phase. And then it sort of flipped and they immediately turned around and they got themselves into another sort of hopeless situation. And I went to Hamburg because I thought the West is the future.
Was the West the future? How did you feel in Hamburg as a young East German woman looking to find a better future for herself?
I mean, I was surprised how much stigmatized I was. People really looked down on me. I mean, I was the sort of girl from the wilderness. When I registered for my university, they said, oh yeah, like an East German degree. We know you got all the sort of good marks spoon-fed to you. Yeah, I felt really insecure and also ashamed to be an East German. I looked much poorer. I mean, my parents had no money at all, so I was wearing these cheap shoes and cheap clothing and probably bad haircuts. I mean, I looked like an Aussie. I also sometimes even said that I wasn't from East Germany, but I said that I came from a different place.
And this year we are celebrating 35 years of reunification. Where do you see German unity now?
Possibly at its most complicated, complex point ever. This experience of not being recognized, not being seen, disappointment that there's no sort of equality of life, that they aren't as rich as the West Germans. Now it's erupting in so many ways. Like when you look at the results of the last general election, the right-wing populists of the AfD was the most successful party in East Germany.
The far-right AfD, which remains under observation by the Domestic Intelligence Agency and whose policies include mass deportation of immigrants and restoring ties with Russia, secured the vote of one in five Germans. The party's co-leader, Alice Weidel, says Elon Musk is among those to have congratulated her and is demanding once again that her opponents drop their refusal to allow the AfD into government.
First of all, they're very present. They're in every town square on every weekend, handing out flyers, talking to the people in the ways that other traditional mainstream parties aren't, who maybe show up before an election. And so obviously it's paid dividends. But also, they appeal to this idea that reunification wasn't successful and that the people in East Germany weren't really freed or liberated from a different form of social control than the police state. And so in East Germany, they've tailored their message very much to the sense of frustration and dissatisfaction with reunification itself.
So we've come to Cottbus today, and we're sitting in a bakery in a hospital since our interviewee has had a motorbike accident but has still kindly agreed to speak to us today. We're talking to Daniel Münschke from the local AfD party chapter. Apart from being a politician, you're also a Gubener. You're from Gruben originally. You were born here. You continue to live in the region.
Yes, I'm the local representative volunteer for Guben City Council, deputy chairman of the AfD District Association, and I'm also the vice president of the Brandenburg State Parliament.
What do you do to connect with people? Because we heard from a lot of Gubeners that they feel that there's a huge disconnect between politics and the people.
So we were the first to organise activities in Guben, where we held a rally with open microphones and people who are naturally afraid could come and express themselves. Of course politics is driven by fear. People are now being treated with contempt and they're afraid to communicate openly how they feel about certain issues in case of reprisals, that they'll lose their jobs or not be promoted or whatever.
One hugely acrimonious issue here in the East is green infrastructure. People very much resent the government imposition of wind turbines and solar panels in their much-loved landscape of forests and meadows, and the AfD has taken up the cause.
It's a political issue. The bigger picture is that a small political elite, which consisted of the Chancellor at the time and her ministers, made the decision to switch energy supply exclusively to renewables. This emotional decision to close down nuclear sites was made because of the accident and tsunami in Fukushima. So now, with renewables, the Federal Network Agency has to intervene 400 times a day just to keep the grid stable, and it ends up selling and buying energy from neighbouring countries. I just don't understand it, and people here don't either.
Coupled with the switch to renewables was the phasing out of coal, an important employer, as part of the structural transformation of the region. There's a saying here in the East, Berlin is a long way away, and this was another bitterly contested decision. Mayor Fred Morrow told us his own sister worked in open cast mining until 3 years ago. They were well paid jobs by East German standards, so the government decision to end coal made people incredibly insecure and those jobs had to be replaced. What's more, the huge plant for production of lithium hydroxide planned for Guben, which would create 160 high-tech jobs, has yet to secure funding from the EU or the federal government. Though there is a question, of course, about whether Guben could actually find 160 skilled workers to fill those jobs because of depopulation. It makes the question of imported labour quite tricky, especially for the AfD. Daniel Münschke.
Also gerade wie in Guben.
In Guben in particular, we've lived in the border region for as long as I can remember, and we've always had immigration from Poland or the Czech Republic, people who are very close to our way of life, are hard working, and we need this workforce, period. But at the moment, we have a big pot and everything is thrown in, stirred. This means that migration, whether it's asylum, flight or economic immigration, immediately enters the social systems and is absorbed. That's why federal budgets are massively overstretched. State budgets are overstretched. Municipalities no longer know how to renovate or even build schools and daycare centres. And we're saying this must be scaled back. This must be separated.
There are obviously those colleagues within your party as well who talk about a bigger sort of re-migration programme as well. And I know that within the party that's been quite a controversial topic to discuss as well. Where do you stand on that?
What is quite clear, and I stand by this, is that we must deport those who currently have no residence permit in Germany or who are criminals. It cannot be a solution to have social security taxes paid for by people who work every day, like here in the hospital, if these people are still allowed to stay here and get social security. Many cannot integrate into the job market because in some cases they don't have the language or because they come from other cultures, which is perfectly normal. But ultimately, as politicians, I do think we should be clear and say, OK, these people have to go home.
Well, you see the AfD making a difference between Germans who were born here and people who migrated here and became Germans later. Obviously, in their opinion, one class of Germans is better than the other. I'm Maria Fiedler. I'm the deputy head of the Berlin office of Der Spiegel. And I wrote a book with my co-author Katja Bauer. It's called The AfD Method. I think the AfD thrives on pessimism. So this is core of their political strategies. The AfD actively paints a picture of Germany in decline, where there's always crises and where migrants want to take over the country, where the AfD presenting itself as the savior of Germany or the last line of defense. Next year, there are elections in Saxony-Anhalt, and there are fears that the AfD could get an absolute majority, so they could even govern alone. And then they would roll back climate protection measures, also reshape education and memory politics, emphasizing a nationalist and revisionist view of German history. Experts also warned that they could try and change the democratic order to restrict funding for opposition groups. So you could see the AfD would bring about really radical changes if they would only govern in one part of Germany.
And it's also the case that the AfD will stand alongside those protesting against military support for Ukraine. For historical reasons, the East retains a much closer affinity with Russia than the West of Germany. But for all that, the East is still, in many ways, a good place to live. This owner of a local pub has returned to the Guben region with his family.
So my name is Sebastian Wieland. I'm the owner of the village pub Zum Dorfkrug Kerkwitz, where we are today. And I'm 42 years old. And in my real life, I'm an engineer for Deutsche Bahn.
Driving around here, the houses all look beautiful. A lot of stuff is really, you know, nicely done. The roads are beautiful, no potholes, nothing. And a lot of people would come here and think, why are you so unhappy as a region? Why is there so much protest voting going on? What's the problem when everything is clearly better than it was?
I think the problem of some people is that Germany is a rich country. And they don't see where the money is. Where is all the money? Where is it? The government is spending so much money because when they close the coal mine here next to, then many, many people will get unemployment. They also, the Deutsche Bahn is spending millions of euros to Cottbus, 1 billion euro in Cottbus. This is to get the people, to keep them in work from the energy sector to the rail sector. The schools, sometimes the schools are horrible because they're really old sometimes. When you look to the restrooms and to the infrastructure in the school, it's not in the infrastructure of regarding Wi-Fi. It's not in our rail network because we have really, really trouble in the rail network and the people are asking, where is all the money? Mm. When you are in Guben, there are also some places where you don't have mobile access. That's in 2025. I don't know. It's a little bit.
Vietnamese Germans Martin Merz and his wife Fungi have also abandoned Berlin to come and live in Guben.
Okay, my name is Martin. As a rapper, my name is Young Papi. And we are in the Young Tea Store and sell bubble teas and give culture.
Young Papi, Platane, ich komm aus der 60, gib ihn, findest mich hinten am Block, riechst du doch das nicht, Holland, die Türen sind locked, yeah.
The Young Tea Store has become a hub for live performance of music, including hip-hop.
We have around 6 main artists here now, which are all from Guben, and a lot of other artists from Cottbus, Berlin, Hamburg, which joined the Cypher to make music.
Clearly your very strong connection to Guben also comes into your music and into your work. You have a song called G-U-B, G-U-B, about Guben. What did you want to say with that song?
The thing is, local patriotism is a thing in hip-hop. You have to represent where you came from. And I want to show the bright side of Guben, and in the song I describe one long night and everything which happens, so we celebrate drinking. Then I make a small joke about right-wing people.
I mean, this is one of the most AfD voting areas in the country. Do you have any views on that? How do you feel about the surge in AfD support?
So I think the problem now is that people stop talking to each other. The AFD tried to give people a really easy solution for complicated things. When people stop to talk to each other, we can't find solutions together. By many people, the wall is still in their head, but there's no wall. Not for the young generation, not for me.
In some parts, the reunification is a success story, but we still have to do a lot of work.
Dirk Oschmann has been considering how relations between East and West could be improved.
And I would say a quota is a good idea to catch people from East Germany and put them into responsible positions. It's a question of the political will. Then people say, well, what's the difference between East Germans and West Germans? You can't tell anymore. Mm. Yes, you can. You open the newspaper and it's always clear who is East German and who is West German.
The media is really transporting stereotypes mainly about the East. Sometimes journalists only come to Eastern Germany for 1 or 2 days just to write a story and then leave again. And I think that's important that you don't do this parachute journalism where you treat the East like a foreign country or something. And also to acknowledge that some things Eastern Germans have achieved during GDR times that should have been adopted. For example, in Eastern Germany, women were a big part of the workforce. So the child care system worked. And so there was more equality. And I think it's important to tell people in Eastern Germany that what they achieved in their lifetime is worth something.
It feels that Germany has given up a little bit. And they look at the differences between East and West, but there's not programs in place. And most of the programs in place are geared towards simply like trying to get incomes in the East more up to income levels in the West. But some of those softer areas of why the grievances in East Germany are there, those programs don't really seem to take place. And it just seems that there's a bit of like shrugging of the shoulders, and Germany has just kind of accepted that East and West Germany are just simply different.
When I was born here in the 1980s, Guben was a bustling hub of the GDR's chemical industry. It was shrouded in smog and crowded with people. Today, it's clean and beautifully rebuilt, but also a little bit desolate as residents debate how to best revitalize the region. It's clear to me that here in Eastern Germany, lives have been transformed on an almost incomprehensible scale since 1990. 35 years may be a lifetime in politics, but it has not been enough to heal the wounds of a once divided nation. Germany's future prosperity is surely best built on a foundation of parity and unity.
Our culture can cancel someone in the blink of an eye. Celebrities, sports stars, politicians, influencers, and royalty can all find themselves in the firing line. In the age of AI-generated evidence, lawsuits written in legalese you need to pass the bar to decipher, how are you supposed to separate the fact from the fiction? That's where we come in. I'm Anushka Mutanda-Dawati, and this is Fame Under Fire from BBC Sounds. We'll myth-bust, debunk, pre-bunk, fact-check, and get to the truth behind the timeline. There are new episodes every week, so make sure you listen to Fame Under Fire and subscribe on BBC Sounds.